Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, December 8th, 2017. Two clans are fighting in South Sudan's Lek State.
The lack of efficient, effective judicial system in the state to trial cases also and bring justice to those perpetrators has also contributed, and that's why communities and families are taking law into their hands to revenge.
And motorists are still struggling to buy fuel in oil-rich South Sudan.
For public transportation, NALPET is subsidizing fuel for them so that the price cannot go up for our public.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Dozens of people were killed in an intercommunal fighting between clans from Western Lakes and Gok State. A deputy government spokesperson says Western Lakes State is calling on the Kir administration to intervene and stop further bloodshed. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Juba.
Akol Paul Cordid is a member of parliament representing Western Lakes State in the National Legislative Assembly. Cordid, who is also Deputy Information Minister, says intercommunal fighting is out of control in certain areas of the state.
This violence involves a section of Dinka Gar from Pakam and Rup and some few clans from Gok State as well. And we condemn this barbaric act of violence in the strongest term possible. We also convey our heartfelt condolences to the families who have lost their loved ones.
Cordid and Daniel Dio, chairman of Western Lakes State Caucus in the National Assembly, have asked President Kiir to immediately intervene and stop the bloodshed in their state.
We've asked the government, the presidency, the leadership of the country, who wrote to them to immediately declare a state of emergency in the area, and also quick military deployment of the forces to conduct a total disarmament of the civil population. We're also calling on the international community, especially those who are already operating Western Lakes State as well as in South Sudan, provide humanitarian assistance to people affected, the vulnerable people affected by this conflict.
Cordid says cattle raiding, disputes over water and pasture land, and revenge killings are chronic problems in Western Lakes State. He is urging President Kiir to take a strong stand and end the cycle of atrocities being committed in the area.
The lack of efficient, effective judicial system in the state to trial cases also and bring justice to those perpetrators has also contributed, and that's why communities and families are taking law into their hands to revenge. Furthermore, the rampant presence of weapons, small weapons as well as some heavy weapons in the hands of the civilians is making it easier for destruction and death to occur at a large rate as it's happening now.
Believes today's violence was in revenge for a violent attack 2 days ago in which dozens of civilians were killed. Dio says he doesn't know how many people were killed today in Western Lakes State.
We are not yet given the exact number of people who might have lost their lives, but I heard that the village has been burned down. Today's violence is started by those of Bakam as a revenge for the 6th attack. Before they were attacked on the 6th, and today those who were attacked on the 6th are now the ones attacking on the 8th.
South Sudan in Focus placed several calls to Western Lakes State Information Minister Bol Machok, all of which went unanswered. Presidential spokesperson Atenue Kateng says President Kiir will address the violence in Western Lakes State.
The president has called the Security Council, and the Security Council is in a meeting now, and the issue of Lakes State will be part of what the Security Council will address. As soon as the Security Council conclude the meeting, measures will be taken to address the issue of Lakes State. I know these are one people, who have decided to kill themselves for no reason. Like today, we have received information that more casualties, more death has occurred, which is very, very extremely unfortunate.
Ateng says he strongly agrees with the recommendations for a declaration of a state of emergency in Western Lakes State and a complete disarmament of civilians there.
You know, the state of emergency was declared in four states, which has been renewed last month for another 3 months. What is happening in Western Lakes State is not less than what has happened. It is even worse. So the president may declare the state of emergency in those places. The issue of disarmament, of course, after the state of emergency, civilians have to be disarmed. We also heard that this morning they have used even a grenade for the civilian to arm themselves to that level is unbecoming, and it cannot be allowed to happen.
The letter from Western Lakes state officials also calls for a peace conference to be held in Rumbek between the different warring parties in the area. Ateng says all recommendations will be taken into consideration, but only President Kiir can determine the next course of action. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biadro in Juba.
The South Sudan government has given green light to private companies to import fuel into the country to address chronic fuel shortages. In the past few years, the government-owned Nilepet company had the monopoly to import fuel to South Sudan and distribute it to petrol stations. As Manyang David Mayer reports for VOA from Juba, a handful of petrol stations are now selling fuel at higher prices.
Motorists at a Sawir petrol station in Juba's Gumbo neighborhood are buying fuel. In the past, motorists used to queue up here for hours, sometimes even days, to buy fuel. Now it takes them a few minutes to fuel up and pay. David Nailo Mayo, head of finance and economic planning in South Sudan's Transitional Legislative Assembly, says the government is looking at ways to lift the fuel subsidy.
When that study is complete, I'm sure the government will decide to lift the fuel subsidy on the terms that are recommended by the studies. If there are private companies who want to bring their fuel and sell at the market price, the security should not restrict them.
In July, South Sudan Finance and Economic Planning Minister Stephen Diu Dao requested Parliament's approval to lift fuel subsidies so the government could pay civil servants' salaries. But lawmakers rejected the proposal, saying it could lead to a jump in fuel prices and transportation cost. A public transport vehicle driver who prefers to be identified only as Jackson fueled his minibus in Juba. Speaking in Arabic, Jackson says even though he can buy fuel now, the prices are just too high.
There is no crowd now here, so this is good. It is helping the situation, but we think that the price is too high. We are just buying it at this price simply because it is not available anywhere else. But honestly, this price needs to be reduced a little bit.
Jackson paid 3,500 South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent to $20 for 20 liters or petrol for his minibus. At Shirkat bus station, buses load up passengers and leave. In the past, passengers had to fight for available space, with some making their way on board through the bus windows. Now, there are plenty of buses and travelers appear relaxed. But even though public transport is available, passengers like Matthew Magai complain that transportation costs are too high.
If I'm working the police, I may receive 1,000, maybe 200 for a month, of which it cannot be equivalent to the cost of transportation can be high, because transportation currently is 50 going to Konyokonya here. Then from Konyokonya to Juba, it may be another 50 when we are using this now. So it can fail the government in terms of work, because most of people will not be able to reach where they are working.
Many commuters, like Magai, say they spend their entire monthly salaries on paying transport fees. Ye Poch, public relations director at Nilepet, says the public shouldn't panic.
For public transportation, Nilepet is subsidizing fuel for them. so that the price cannot go up for our public.
Poch says the government is trying its best to provide fuel for its citizens for both their generators and vehicles. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Still in Juba, some internally displaced persons at a camp doubt the much-publicized high-level revitalization forum will bring genuine peace to South Sudan. As INBO reports, the IDPs say they are reminded every day of the consequences of failed talks and broken promises.
Internally displaced people in Juba are planning a funeral for three men who went missing last week and were found dead in Jebel Kujur. Camp resident Stephen Loro is still trying to figure out the details of what he believes were serious crimes committed.
They went out because there are some people who are looking for things. They are living in the camp when they went out, and then they were caught by security personnel. And then after that, we have been looking for them. Nobody was telling us where they were about. And then at the end, this morning, their bodies were collected behind the mountain, which is Jebel Kujur.
Loro does not know what led to the killings of the three men. He says he does not know who was responsible, but he believes the deaths are part of the consequence of the lack of security in the city.
You know, every day in Juba, you can hear of killing. Every night in Juba, there is killing. So everybody lost trust on the president.
Camp resident Lakwat Gatmai shares those concerns.
We have many problems. You know, if I have to tell you one by one, it can take all the woman just talking about our problems. So the best problem here that our person has in POC, the woman raising. For here in camp, we have a lot of firewood, and we don't have money to buy charcoal. So our woman decided to go outside the camp and look for firewood. But always you are hearing the problem of raising.
For both Gatmai and Loro, the success of the high-level revitalization forum is a matter of life and death. While the public blames unknown gunmen for killings in Juba, Loro says it is ultimately the president of South Sudan who was responsible for creating peace and security in the country. He says he is desperately hoping the high-level revitalization forum will act as a conduit of peace talks that translate into genuine stability.
Well, we are looking at it as something positive in one way or another, but it, because we lost trust from the government that the government usually signs fees and usually destroyed it, this is where we lost trust.
James Mabor, another camp resident who has lived in Juba's IDP camp since the violence broke out in the capital in July 2016, says the forum needs to revisit the capital's security arrangements. He adds IGAD must come up with a way to ensure that a true ceasefire will hold this time.
As victims, we cannot any longer withstand any time more than this 4 years. We are pressed on petitions, our concerns, and our interests to have this war ended, the UN system and to others. With that, it has a determination to bring an end to this war will back it and propose that they should work on, first and foremost, this question of social justice.
If the forum does not lead to a peace agreement that is upheld by all parties, Mabor says it will be very hard to turn things around.
People's hope are on that forum at the moment. And if that is best, then it will be an unfortunate situation. We must know that they are the last hope people are thinking and wishing to realize.
Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN says South Sudanese children are at risk in 2018. Stay tuned for details on that story.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best lesson you've ever learned from a child?
Don't mind with what other people are saying about your mistakes, laughing at you when you make error. If you don't mind about them, just the way a child doesn't mind about you laughing at him because he make a mistake.
Always tell the truth. He doesn't lie at all. Even if he's not telling the truth, if you ask him, please tell me true, he will come back and tell you the truth. Most of the time he's curious. He wanted to see what is this.
They forget quickly, then if you try to bring him or her back, then they respond positive. They don't stick like older people, how they react. We should learn to forgive.
They're always genuine with their interactions or questions, yeah. I mean, there is a child and there's an adult, and always we adults are like consumed with a lot of problems.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The World Health Organization says more than 1 million South Sudanese children will be at risk of malnutrition in 2018. WHO's technical officer for nutrition in South Sudan says the areas affected include Ayot in Upper Nile State, Wau and Kapwaita. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Fiki Akwera, a mother to two, is taking care of her two-year-old baby, admitted for malnutrition at a nutritional center at Tori Civil Hospital. Speaking in Arabic, Akwera says she has spent 3 weeks at the center but has seen no improvement in her baby's health. Akwera says she brought her child because she doesn't have enough milk. She says the lack of milk had made her child weak and sick. She says since she brought him to the center, his health has been unstable. She says on some days, the child looks stronger, but sometimes, like today, she sees his health is deteriorating. Another mother, Christine Goodyear, says the Torit Nutrition Center saved her child's life. Speaking in Arabic, Goodyear says her 1.5-year-old baby began receiving therapeutic feeding for 2 weeks ago. She says when she first brought her baby to the nutritional center, his health was bad, but now he is improving. Goodyear says her child is still feeding on milk because the health workers told her the child will only be given peanut paste after he is discharged. Goodyear and Akwera are the only two mothers who have their babies admitted at the Torit Hospital Nutrition Center. Saida Justin, a nutrition assistant at the center, says malnutrition cases were high earlier this year, but the number of cases has dropped over the past 2 months. Speaking in Arabic, Justin says they now get less than 2 per week. In January, February, March, April, and May, Justin says they had many patients. She says they could admit 30 to 40 patients in their wards. Other children would be treated, but after 2 months, they would find them being readmitted, Justin says. But as of August, September, and October, they have been seeing one case per day. In November, the number dropped and there were no admissions. Justin says malnutrition cases are increasing in parts of South Sudan because most parents do not regularly feed their babies, primarily because they don't have enough food. She has this advice for parents. She says the vegetable which they plant around their homes can be prepared in a good way and given to the child. Justin says those who live in villages or towns and have chicken can get the eggs and boil them for their children. She advises mothers to feed their children at least twice a day because children are not like adults who are capable of waiting until evening before they have a meal. The UN World Health Organization warns an estimated 1.1 million children are at risk of becoming acutely malnourished in 2018. Marina Adrianopoli, World Health Organization's technical officer for nutrition, says the WHO is working to respond to the increasing threat of acute malnutrition, which is one step away from famine.
Acute malnutrition remains a major public health emergency in several parts of South Sudan. The burden of acute malnutrition is likely to remain substantially high even in 2018, with more than 1 million children under 5 estimated to be acutely malnourished and in need of life-saving nutrition and health interventions and services.
Adrianopolis says the areas at risk of malnutrition are those facing severe food shortages, especially in places like Wau, Kapweta, and Ayod.
So these extreme conditions will be persisting only in former Wau County by the beginning of the next year. Of high concern, of course, remains the area of Greater Bagari in Wau County, where still today 15,000 people are experiencing catastrophe, which is aggravated by the very limited access by the humanitarians. This area has also extremely high levels of global acute malnutrition.
Adrianopolis says a third of children under the age of 5 are acutely malnourished in Greater Bagari. Adrianopolis says the number of people expected to suffer from severe food insecurity is expected to rise to 5.1 million early next year and deteriorate further in the lean season, with the worst-case scenario of a return to famine in various locations across the country.
In September this year, just a few months ago, the number was much higher, with an estimated 6 million people in very critical food insecurity, which is about 56% of the total population. If we look back in 2016, the same period, 4.4 million people were facing severe food insecurity. And in 2015, just 2 years ago, the prevalence was even lower, with 3.9 million people facing severe food insecurity, which was 34% of the population.
Adrianopolis says that suggests the South Sudan conflict has intensified the scale and magnitude of the crisis to an unprecedented level. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The World Health Organization warns the number of people living with dementia globally will triple from 50 million to 152 million by 2050. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where WHO is launching a global monitoring system on dementia, which will track progress and identify areas of concern.
The World Health Organization reports dementia exacts a huge social and economic burden, one that will grow as people age and succumb to this mental illness. The agency estimates 5% of the world's older population suffers from dementia and is in need of care. Belying common belief, WHO says this is not mainly a problem of rich countries, as dementia affects a larger number of people living in poorer countries. The health agency says the cost of caring for dementia patients today is $818 billion, or 1% of the world's gross domestic product. Taryn Dua is a medical officer in WHO's Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. She says the economic cost will be more than $2 trillion by 2030.
Moreover, there is stigma, human rights violation associated with people with dementia and their caregivers, and therefore it is imperative that we have a public health response. An important step that has been taken by all member states has endorsing a global action plan on dementia this year.
She says the plan focuses on caring for people who have dementia, on preventing and on finding a cure for this illness. She says raising awareness of this problem is essential.
Many people consider that dementia is a normal part of aging, which is not true. We need to think about risking preventing dementia, because the risk factors for dementia are the same for non-communicable diseases. So good exercise, good diet, no tobacco, decreasing alcohol, all of this can decrease the risk of dementia.
Along with this, she says elderly people who suffer from depression should receive treatment for the malady. She says social inclusion and cognitive exercise are other strategies that should be employed to reduce the risk of dementia. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
On the surface, a lot has changed in Zimbabwe in the last month. Longtime President Robert Mugabe finally resigned after 37 years in power, and the new administration has vowed to usher in a new era. But prominent Zimbabwean analysts say the new administration will not be different from the one it replaced. VOA's Anita Powell has the story from Johannesburg.
At a rally in Harare, President Robert Mugabe praised his wife and went on the offensive against the vice president he fired earlier this week.
He says we should uphold the root of the party. We despise those that abandon the party in the afternoon and when it is evening they go against the party. We despise that. It does not matter even if you were very close with the president. It does not matter if the president called you to the party and put you close to him and walked with you through the journey. As the president spoke, people held up banners showing support for First Lady Grace Mugabe. Already, state-controlled media, which is loyal to the longtime president, has reported that two provinces have already chosen to back Mrs. Mugabe to be the new vice president. The ruling ZANU-PF party will make the official decision at a party conference in mid-December. Meanwhile, Chris Mutsvangwa, the head of Zimbabwe's powerful Veterans Association, was in neighboring South Africa Wednesday, agitating for recently sacked Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa to lead a multi-party coalition to challenge Mugabe in the polls next year. He deflected the notion of mobilizing the nation's army to overthrow Mugabe by force.
If we are going to have an electoral slate, once the electoral process has been restored to an even keel, where we keel where there is no interference now, we would want a ticket where Mnangagwa becomes the head of the ticket and Dumiso Dawenga becomes the vice.
President Mugabe fired Mnangagwa on Monday, citing disloyalty, deceitfulness, and other issues. Mutsvangwa, who served in Mugabe's cabinet in the 1990s and now says he regrets it, had this to say about the Mugabe family.
They are using the state, the executive power of a doddering senile old man who has now been completely seized by his wife, who is young and ambitious. We want to say to the region, can't you find a way of making this old man see sense? This is a coup by a marriage certificate.
President Mugabe is 93 years old. His wife is 52. In a statement issued Wednesday from an undisclosed location, Mnangagwa said he fled threats on his life, is safe now, and that he was loyal to Mugabe to a fault during his tenure. He says he will now work to restore the integrity of the ruling party without Mr. Mugabe. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In the only match played Friday at the SACAFA Senior Challenge Cup football tournament, the defending champion Cranes of Uganda battered the Bright Stars of South Sudan 5-1 in Kenya's western town of Kakamega. Uganda and Burundi now lead Group B, standing with 4 points from 2 matches. Ethiopia has 3 points from 2 matches, and South Sudan has been eliminated after a 3-0 loss to Ethiopia in its first match. This 39th edition of the tournament is for teams that are members of SACAFA, the Council for East and Central Africa Football Associations. There will be semi-final matches on December 14th and December 15th, and the final is December 17th. And that's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song We Want Peace by Emmanuel Jal.
And we gonna get it. Throw your hands in the air, let me see that you're with it. Corrupt governments causing wars and beef, and my only intent is to bring about peace. Sudan and Darfur gonna stand up proud, at the newborn mouths gonna shout it out loud. Freedom, freedom, song of the free one, fighting for the people in the African kingdom. Freedom fighters, we really need them. People in the world, you all gotta be one. The evil and the wicked we will destroy, bringing peace to every man. The massacre that happened in Africa, to all the greedy leaders, we're coming after you. We're gonna capture and take back our streets. Listen to the rhyme as I bring about peace.
We want peace, and we're gonna get it. We're gonna get it, we're gonna get it. We want peace, and we're gonna get it.
We've been listening to Emmanuel Jal with the song We Want Peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to hear what you think about our show. You can find us at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Let's scream and shout, cause we want peace. The world was a little bit better. Time to start looking at the man in the mirror. Fear is the devil's policeman.